Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to mini episode 326 of Real Life Ghost Stories, and I have four spooky stories for you today, and the last story comes from November the 23rd, 2023, and story number one comes from Jaleesa. My earliest memory as a young child was helping my dad's best friend move into his new place. My dad and his friend went outside to grab a few more boxes from the car. I could see them from the window as I put away the silverware in the kitchen. Then I heard it. A creepy voice calling my dad's best friend's name down the hallway that was attached to the kitchen.
Harry.
It said three times, almost tauntingly. I slowly walked toward the dark hallway, and at the end of it was a white closet door that was cracked open. The voice spoke out from it again, calling out his name, and the door pushed open even more. I turned around and booked it out of there. Years later, Eric told me that house was the creepiest place he had ever lived in. The wires would knot up, things would go missing, and that he just could never, no matter how hard he tried, get that damn closet door to stay closed. As I got older, I started having more and more experiences. One night in particular that sticks out was when I was very sick with a high fever. I was laying on the couch because I just didn't like staying in my room anymore due to the scary experiences I've had in there. I felt like someone was watching me, so I turned over and came face to face with a man kneeling down next to me. He was slightly transparent and was dressed in an older style clothing and had a handlebar mustache. I flipped back over and covered my head with the blankets, willing that man to go away. I finally fell back asleep, and when I awoke, I no longer had the fever. When I told family members, they just thought I was delusional from the fever, which maybe I was. But a couple of years later, my aunt made me a photo album of our family. And there was one photo that caught my attention immediately. It was the man with the handlebar mustache. I was sure of it. Turns out that man was my four times great-grandfather. When I was in middle school, my mother was stationed at Carlisle Barracks in Pennsylvania. The housing on the base was too small for us, so she really wanted to find a bigger place for us nearby. One day, she surprised me with a house she decided to rent. It was bigger than anything we'd been in as of recently and had a huge backyard that was backed by a bison farm. On paper, this house was absolutely amazing and a real find. However, the day of the move-in, the previous tenants came to my mother and warned her that the place was haunted and that the front door would frequently unlock itself. My mother brushed it off because a big yard and decent rent? Deal. One night, my mother and I were in her bedroom that was on the first floor, right off the kitchen. We were laying in her bed watching a movie when we heard a bunch of glass shattering in the kitchen. Immediately, we jumped up to go and look and see if anything had fallen. And nothing was out of place. We looked at each other, shrugged, and went back to watching the movie. Another time, I had a friend sleeping over, and she jumped up terrified that she had seen a figure of a man walk from the end of the bed and around the corner to my closet. We turned on the lights to peek around, but there was nobody there. I would frequently hear loud thudding footsteps upstairs pacing back and forth when no one else was home. But me and my poor terrified dog, who would look up at the ceiling, trembling whenever the footsteps started up. As a young child, I would have a recurring scary dream where I'd be in a house with beautiful pocket doors at night, looking through a kitchen to a back door. There was a single light on, and underneath that light was a large, hairy beast with sharp teeth grinning at me and banging on the glass. I would always wake up right after that part, always tearful and shaken with fear. One day I had realised that this new house had pocket doors, and when I pulled them out and turned to look through the kitchen to the back door, with horror I realised I had been dreaming about this house over and over, years before I even moved into it. We've had so many stories over the years of people who have dreamed about houses or places before they'd ever been there, before they ended up living there, whatever it is. Is that a precognition thing? Or is that something to do with, like, the house itself? Almost like the universe. The universe knows that you're going to end up living in that house at some point, and the energy of the house is so strong that it ends up infiltrating your dreams somehow. That moment of realization must have been absolutely horrendous, though. To suddenly be looking down into the kitchen and go, oh no, this is the house from my fucking dreams. So rewinding back to the start of the story, I honestly am so freaked out by those entities, whatever they are, that call the names of the occupants of the house. And it feels to me, the more we deal with these kind of stories, it feels to me like that is just sort of a fear thing. Like, there doesn't seem to be an end game if you go to the closet. If you're Eric, you go to the closet after hearing something calling your name. I don't think you're going to be sucked into a vortex in the closet. I think it's just a fear thing. And I wonder if Eric ever heard it calling his name too. Or was that just something that you heard? Are you perhaps more sensitive to these things? Or maybe Eric did hear those things but sort of didn't engage with them, or thought maybe it was only his imagination, that sort of thing. And in terms of your, you know, night that you had a fever, because you can read that and think, if it was just a random man that you saw, you had a fever, so you probably were hallucinating. But the fact that it turns out that it was actually your great-grandfather is a very different situation altogether. Again, is this about susceptibility? If your brain is fighting a fever, is it unable to block out other things that it would ordinarily block out? And story number two comes from Kimberly. My cat Rory was 12 years old. Her heart wasn't working properly anymore, and I knew she was going to pass away soon since she had stopped eating a few days ago. My 4-year-old had been sick for a week, so he was out of school and home with me during that time. He finally got to go back Wednesday, and I came home after dropping the kids off and scooped Rory up and was petting her and talking to her like I normally do. She meowed a few times at me, and then I laid her back down and went into the kitchen. It's a very small house. And I was looking at the dirty dishes and thinking to myself, do I want to wash them first or eat first? Suddenly I heard my cat, for lack of better words, scream 3 short sounds in the very deep voice that she had. I whipped around thinking, what the fuck was that? And when I did, this white blur swished towards and went through me down by my feet. I knew in that moment it was her. I fully believe that my fur baby waited until my son was feeling better to leave us. We don't deserve cats, okay? We don't. And I think that that's probably true, that they are more perceptive than we give them credit for a lot of the time. And I think that she probably did wait for your son to feel better before she left you, because I do think cats are very conscious of the health of their owners, you know. Tim, if you're listening, I'm very sorry, but I am going to tell your story. The lovely Tim, who has done a lot of content with me on Patreon, who is a historian and all-round gentleman and brilliant guy, rescued a cat last year called Lily. She is absolutely beautiful, but was not in any way, shape or form an affectionate or lap cat. Anyway, so a couple of weeks ago, Tim was ill. He had a very, very pretty serious injury and was bedbound for a substantial amount of time, and Lily did not leave his side and suddenly became the most lappiest of lap cats you've ever seen in your life. So they know and they care and we love them.
Hold up. Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And story number three comes from Rachel. When I was growing up, my grandmother was my very best friend. She was the most unique person I have ever met, and I attribute all the best parts of me to her. I spent the night with her every single chance that I had, even when I was in high school, and had lots of friends and invitations to parties. There was nowhere I would rather be than at my grandmother's house. Our bond was palpable and recognized by everyone in our family. I do believe in reincarnation, and I know that we have spent many lifetimes together. I don't know what happens when we die, but I do know that I will find her in whatever lies beyond this lifetime. She died very unexpectedly when I was in my senior year of high school. It happened over the course of a few weeks. She was in and out of the hospital, and any time she stayed the night at the hospital, I was right next to her, sleeping on any surface I could, even if I had to wake up super early and drive to school the next morning. Her death was painful, and none of the medical professionals knew what the cause of all her symptoms and pain were until it was too late. She was rushed into an emergency surgery on November the 23rd, 2011, and died during that surgery. It's been 12 years and I still mourn and ache for her every single day, but she told me that if she could visit me after she died, she would. And I have dreamed about her every single week, sometimes multiple times a week, for the last 12 years. I've heard lots of stories of visitation dreams on the podcast, and decided I was finally ready to share my experience. I have extremely vivid dreams every night, and I have since I was a child. It is something that my friends and family know about me. 2 days after my grandmother died, I was sleeping in my bed, curled up in the quilt that my grandmother slept with when she first visited me. Her visitation was so visceral that it brought me to half consciousness. I was between sleep and being awake. I felt her lay down beside me and spoon me like we had done so many times before. I could feel the weight and texture of her body. I could smell everything about her. Her natural essence, her hair, the faint smell of her Camel cigarettes that she religiously smoked. I know that she came to visit me that day. We didn't get the chance to properly say goodbye, and I think she probably needed it as much as I did. A few weeks later, this hand-painted lamp that my mom had given me began to shake on my dresser. There was no reason for it, and I somehow just knew that it was my grandmother saying hello. I said out loud, "I love you, lady. Thank you for visiting me." And it stopped. As the years passed, I continued to dream about her all the time. Sometimes I think it is just my mind searching for her, and sometimes they feel very real and more like a visitation dream. I moved 600 miles away from my family 2 years ago for my now husband's residency, and I was feeling very lonely from the change and missing my grandmother a lot. I had one of my most powerful visitation dreams around that time. Lady and I were sitting on a wall together facing a beautiful green field, and this particular dream felt so powerful and real to me while I was in the dream that I asked her if she was visiting me, and she said yes. I've had so many of these visitation dreams that I truly believe that they are real and that they are a special gift of mine. I even had a very realistic dream a few months ago where I was teaching a lecture in my dream to other people on how to astral project and access the spirit world while sleeping. About a year after moving to Charleston, my husband and I tried to buy a house. We had put in more than 20 offers on homes and each time received the news that we had lost out to another bidder. Finally, we toured this cute home that we both instantly loved. The last room that I looked in was a little girl's bedroom. And as I walked out the door, I realized that there was a sign on it with the little girl's name. Her name was Edith, which is a very uncommon name for a little girl in America at this time. And it was also my grandmother's name. I wrote a letter to the owners of the home and shared that my grandmother's name was also Edith and that I felt very connected to this home. And despite not being the best offer on the house, they decided to give it to us. I am writing this email to you inside our home. The little girl had even written her name in the fresh concrete that the previous owners poured. So on my back patio, my grandmother's nickname, Edie, is forever carved into our home. A few months after buying the home, I was home alone and out of nowhere was struck with the grief of missing my grandmother. I sat on the floor looking at a picture I had framed of her and sobbed and told her how much I missed her. I asked her for a specific sign. I asked her to show me a camel to let me know that she was with me and that she had heard me. I chose this symbol because it was specific to her, the Camel brand cigarettes that she smoked, and because it was an unusual object that I'd be unlikely to see in my day-to-day life. Later that night, my husband and I decided to go to the state fair, which was completely unplanned. And I shit you not, the very first thing I saw when walking into the fair was a real-life camel. I grew up in America and have been to many state fairs, and I've never seen a camel at these fairs. Not only is it an unusual animal to see at a state fair, but it was truly the first thing that I saw when I walked in. I'm sure this could be chalked up to coincidence, but it didn't feel like one. This past weekend, I decided to try crocheting again, which is something I used to do with my grandmother but haven't since she passed. It has made me think about her a lot and has made me feel very connected to her. So perhaps that is why I finally decided to write about my experiences. At the end of the day, I know that all these things could be coincidence or just my mind's way of coping with grief, but she has been gone for 12 years and I still feel very connected with her, not just in memory, but in my dreams. Rachel, that is such a beautiful story. Obviously, I'm incredibly sorry for the loss of your grandmother, especially when the two of you were so close. You had such a close bond. And I think when we talk about soulmates, we often think about soulmates in the romantic sense because that's what's sold to us in media, etc. But I do think we have soulmates that aren't romantic. I think we have soulmates in family members that you just have, as you said, a palpable connection to. And I think the same can be said for friends and wider family members. I think sometimes you just connect with people in a deeply spiritual way that you can't quite explain and that isn't matched. And I'm so glad for you that your grandmother was able to give you these signs, these little flurries of recognition to say, I might be gone physically, but I'm still here in spirit. I'm still here to look after you. I do particularly like the camel story because, you know, a camel is a weird one. You know, obviously your grandmother smoked camel cigarettes. And I do think that when people smoke for a long period of time, their brand of cigarettes becomes like, you know, synonymous with them as an identifier. And to ask to see a camel in America, not necessarily a thing that you would often see. And I can imagine not necessarily, as you said, something that you would see at a state fair. That is pretty incredible. And story number four comes from PA. I was born and raised in Bali, a beautiful island bathed in sunshine, embraced by beaches, coconut trees, and an undercurrent of mysticism. I consider myself a believer in entities beyond the realm of human and animal existence, yet I maintain a skeptic's mind, often rationalizing unusual occurrences. This, I believed, was my defense against fear, especially since I started living on my own. Living in Bali, a place known for its mysticism and spirituality, has only deepened my fascination with the supernatural. The locals here believe in the existence of spirits, demons, and supernatural beings. They make offerings, perform rituals, and live in harmony with these forces. It is a reminder that there is so much more to the world than what meets the eye. At 18, two friends and I rented a charming yet tiny house nestled uphill in the south of Bali. A quaint two-bedroom abode with an outdoor kitchen and an unfinished eerie backyard filled with gravel stones and wild shrubbery. This seemingly perfect home, brand new and affordable, provided us with independence and adventure. One evening, alone in the house, I decided to clean and listen to music. The weather was perfect, and the sun was setting as I joyfully sang along to If I Let You Go by Westlife. Sweeping the floor in our outdoor kitchen, I suddenly heard two piercing screams directly into my right ear. My heart skipped a beat, and I froze. Fully alert, I realized the screams were distinct, filled with anger and pain, and seemed to come from someone standing beside me. I was alone, sober, and not under any influence. Puzzled and frightened, I searched for a rational explanation. The kitchen was open to the backyard, but there was no one in sight. The backyard, surrounded by tall walls, had no entrance except for our main door. No one could sneak up without passing the kitchen. I've watched enough horror films to know that I should leave, so I left immediately, not returning until a housemate came back, seeking refuge at my family's house. I told my mom what happened, and when I saw her face, I immediately regretted it. Instead of a scoff or a mocking laugh as I was expecting, her face looked worried. She asked me, "What have I done?" And I told her that I was sweeping the floor in the kitchen, listening to music when it happened. "Did you throw anything in your backyard without permission?" she asked angrily. I was confused by her questions. I asked what she was talking about, and she repeated the question more urgently. I finally answered yes. I swept off the dirt from the kitchen floor and some dirty water into the backyard. "Don't judge me, I was 18 and lazy." "You have to apologize," my mom immediately said. "To who?" I asked. "You must have disturbed them. The jinn," she said in a very serious tone. Immediately I remembered scary tales my mom and grandparents used to tell me, but as I grew up I had forgotten all about it. Having learned that I might have unknowingly disturbed a paranormal entity didn't make me feel good. So as I always did in these situations, I tried to find the rational explanation and googled what causes someone to hear a piercingly loud scream. I was 100% sure that there was no one in the house with me and it could not have been someone on the street. The scream was directly in my ear. The person or being must have been very close to me. The closest thing I've found on the internet is exploding head syndrome, but as I read, it usually happens when the person is half asleep or almost falling asleep. I was definitely awake and focused. That leaves me with my mom's theory that I might have encountered a jinn. In Islamic theology, jinn are invisible spirits living on earth coexisting with humans. Each has its own personality, family, and social life. Like humans, they can choose to do good or evil. Unlike humans, they are known for living in dark, abandoned places and are more active after dawn. My mom insisted that I apologize to them, convinced that I had likely disrupted their activities. A few hours later, I received a message from one of my housemates, Rhea. She was done with her work and on the way home. That evening when I got home, I shared the story with my two friends. They laughed and suggested that maybe it was just my singing that bothered my own ears, or that a neighbor had been annoyed by the noise and yelled at me. I felt foolish and agreed that it was likely just my imagination. After all, it was only our first week there and we were probably still adjusting to the neighbors and unfamiliar sounds. We continued our night of movies, music and drinks just like any young adults would. As the night went on, I grew tired and decided to go to bed while my two housemates finished watching the movies in the living room. Not even an hour later, I abruptly woke up to my two friends jumping on my bed, trying to wake me up in a panic. They had heard me groaning and then crying in my sleep. I believed them, as tears were still streaming down my face. Terrified, we investigated, finding nothing unusual, yet the atmosphere was heavy with an unseen presence. Jenny was approaching my bedroom door to check on me when suddenly, both of my friends heard a loud noise echoing from the kitchen. It resembled the sound of a heavy rock hitting the ground. Rhea, who was the bravest among us, paused the movie and cautiously opened the door leading to the kitchen and the backyard. However, they found nothing unusual. Jenny was right behind Rhea, peeking in. As they closed the door, they were startled by a loud, piercing scream in their ears. Confused, they exchanged perplexed glances and hurriedly ran to my bedroom, locking the door behind them and proceeding to wake me up. I was still half asleep as Jenny anxiously explained the situation to me. Meanwhile, Rhea peeped through my bedroom window, hoping to catch a glimpse of anyone outside, but there was no sign of movement. Everything seemed quiet and normal. The gate was still locked and our motorbikes remained undisturbed in the driveway. If it had been a burglar attempt to frighten us, they would have stolen our vehicles by now. At that moment, all I could think about was what my mom had said. I had to apologize. And this time when I suggested it to my friends, nobody laughed. Convinced it was gin, my friends supported my apology ritual in the backyard. I cleaned up the dirt I threw in the backyard as much as I could and apologized to an empty space. Though absurd, it had ended the disturbance in the house and we were happy about it. We were also certain that the source of our fear was not of human origin, given that we had been living in the area for a year now without any incidents of burglary or crime. The experience in that house left a lasting impression on me. It was a humbling reminder that there are things beyond our comprehension, beyond what science can explain. My rational mind tried to dismiss it as mere imagination or coincidence, but my gut told me otherwise. The presence we felt, the unexplained screams and noises, it all pointed to something supernatural. We were lucky that it only frightened us with noises rather than causing further harm. A few years ago, my family went to visit our grandmother who lives on another island. She had been living alone for several years since our grandfather had passed away. Her house, a charming old family home that she had inherited from her own grandmother, held many stories and memories within its walls. As we arrived at the house, we couldn't help but feel a sense of nostalgia wash over us. The familiar creaking floors and the smell of homemade meals reminded us of simpler times. Everything looked just as we remembered, including the terrace where we spent countless mornings sipping tea while accompanying Grandma gardening, the narrow corridor that had been converted into a kitchen, and the eerie rooftop with a beautiful view of the railway. One sunny afternoon, after a delightful lunch, my sister and I volunteered to wash the dishes while everyone else gathered in the cozy living room. As we stood side by side, laughing and chattering away, our joyful moment was suddenly interrupted by the sound of footsteps running down the stairs. Startled, we turned our heads to the right, expecting to see someone coming down. But to our bewilderment, there was nobody there. The stairs were just 2 feet away from where I stood, and from that vantage point, we had a clear view of the rooftop entrance. There was simply no way that anyone could have passed by us without our notice. Fear gripped us tightly, and without exchanging a word, we dropped everything and hurriedly made our way to the safety of the living room. Our hearts raced as we tried to catch our breath, desperately searching for an explanation. We recounted the peculiar incident to our family, who listened with concern. My dad feared that there was someone hiding in the rooftop and went up with a baseball bat as we waited in the kitchen, ready to call the police just in case. There are about 12 stairs to reach up to the entrance. The door was still locked. I looked at my sister, who was a big-time scaredy cat, and she widened her eyes, yelped, and held my mom's arm tighter. My dad went out, looked for a while, but didn't find anyone. It's worth mentioning that my grandma lives near a military compound, so we know the place is safe. The distance between houses is quite large. Her house is surrounded by alleyways and a football field. We could not have heard noise from neighbours' houses. We all went back to the living room. Neither me or my sister were able to go anywhere in that house alone for the remainder of our visit, including going to the bathroom after dark. Grandma, being the wise woman that she was, shared tales of the house's history, whispering legends of spirits that might have roamed its corridors. She told us that it might be our late granddad or great-grandparents who just wanted to say hello. Though skeptical at first, her words somehow offered us a sense of solace, knowing that our encounter may have had a deeper, otherworldly explanation. I was 24 and my sister was 20 when this happened. To this day, 10 years later, I never spend a minute alone in any part of that house, as the atmosphere still gives me an overwhelming feeling of unease. PA, I think this is the first story that we've ever had from Bali, which is quite exciting. Firstly, I don't think it's lazy to throw your dirt into the garden. I just wanted to put that out there. When I read that, I was like, should I not be throwing my dirt into the garden? You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a garden at the moment, but if I did and I needed to empty dirty water, I wouldn't even think twice about it, thus awaking all of the gin in the area. I did an episode of the podcast all about gin a really long time ago, but I feel like we need to revisit it because it's such a varied and interesting topic. And on the point about exploding head syndrome, I'm somebody who suffers from exploding head syndrome. I have never had it while not being in bed. You know, it only ever happens to me just as I am falling asleep. If I was in the middle of doing something, even if I was super focused, if I was concentrating on something, I've never had exploding head syndrome. But I would have just, I think I would just would have disintegrated into the ground if I was standing there and something screamed directly into my ear. That definitely feels like it was something that was done to frighten you or disturb you. And I feel like you did the right thing. You know, you've seen enough horror films to know, I can't hang around here, so I'm going to go to my family home. And in a way, I'm glad that your roommates experienced it as well. I know obviously it was really scary for them, but I'm glad they experienced it because it feels like it was validating for you to be like, look, this thing happened to me. And then they were saying, oh, it's probably the neighbors, or it's probably this. They're probably complaining about your singing, etc., etc. And then to have them experience it so you can go, see, I told you something was happening. But I am glad that your mom's suggestion worked, that she was able to say you need to apologize to them for disturbing their land. And obviously that seems to have stopped all the disturbances, which is only a good thing, really. I also really like your grandmother's approach to this, being like, listen, you know, you hear these footsteps up and down. We can't figure out what it was, but it could be spirits. It could be your late granddad coming to say hello. It could be your great grandparents who just want to say hello, which is a lovely thought. You know, like it's obviously scary. And I, too, would be reluctant to be bopping around that house on my own. But it is a lovely thought to think that sometimes these scary things are just ancestors, people that have passed, that are just checking in on us, coming in to say hello. Again, I feel like there are sort of nicer ways to do that, like bestow a load of money on me. That'd be nicer. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Thank you to Jaleesa, Kimberly, Rachel and PA for sending in your stories. Remember, the last story came from November 23rd, 2023. And if you would like to send in your story, you can do so by emailing it to reallifeghoststoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out the website, reallifeghoststoriespodcast.com. And if you are desperate for some extra content, you can subscribe to the Patreon. That is patreon.com/reallifeghoststories, where for $5 a month or $2 a month, you get access to heaps of extra content, as well as every single main and mini episode completely ad-free. And on that note, I shall see you next time.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.